Historic Ulster, the one-time Irish province now embattled Northern Ireland, took its Protestant Calvinism and covenanting memory from Scottish settlers who crossed the Irish Sea to settle there during the 17th and early 18th centuries. In Ulster, these Scotch-Irish, as they were later named in America, fought indigenous Irish Catholics with the same Old Testament self-congratulation that the Dutch marshaled against their Spanish occupiers and the Boers directed against both nearby Zulu tribesmen and would-be British colonial rulers. Harking back to Scottish Presbyterian national covenants in 1557, 1590, 1638, and 1643, as well as to the Scotch-Irish triumph of 1689 to 1690, the Ulstermen, too, became a people driven by sacred memory and biblical analogy. In Aikenson's words, on 23 September 1912, more than 218,000 men, virtually the entire adult male Protestant population of Ulster, signed Ulster's Solemn League and Covenant. This Ulster covenant was modeled on a Scottish Presbyterian original of the late 16th century, which, in its turn, took its doctrine of the reciprocal responsibilities of God and a righteous civil polity directly from the Hebrew Scriptures. In 1969, British troops were again deployed on Ulster streets, and the bloody sectarian conflict they have since policed, recently fading, has diminished the perception of Ulster as a militant Protestant polity based on Hebrew Scripture. The reason for spotlighting history's relative handful of covenanting cultures is the biblical attitudes their people invariably share. Religious intensity, insecure history, and willingness to sign up with an Old Testament God of war for protection. To use a modern-day analogy, these are proud, driven peoples, not ones who would find it easy to get risk insurance. Besides comparing the Boer, Ulster, and Hebrew covenanting mentalities and histories, Aikenson finds other parallels in their shared Old Testament moralities of tribal purity and sacred territoriality. The reasons for the elaboration in these pages have less to do with Ulster and South Africa and more to do with the United States and particularly the South. Israelis and, to an extent, scripture-reading Americans are on their ways to being the last peoples of the covenant. Some of the attendant psychologies involved may be cause for worry. Aikenson brushes by comparisons between South Africa and the American South, or between the Ulster Scots and their cousins below the Mason-Dixon line. In footnotes, however, he lists several such studies. Smith diplomatically confines his American Promised Land and Chosen People discussions to 19th century art. The grandiose promised landscapes, he calls them, of Thomas Cole and Albert Bierstadt. By contrast, in 1971, Conrad Cherry, later the director of the Center for the Study of Religion and American Culture, grappled with the American self-perception head-on in his book, God's New Israel, Religious Interpretations of American Destiny. Time after time, images from the Bible have been used to translate bits of American history into scriptural challenges and analogies. A grateful nation hailing George Washington as the American Moses, or Joshua. The 1776 portrait of King George III as Pharaoh in his chariot. And the no longer downtrodden South of 1876 claiming redemption from Northern, read Egyptian, occupation and reconstruction. We might even add the image building circa 2002 of Saddam Hussein as another Nebuchadnezzar and Baghdad as the second Babylon. As Chapter 7 will show, religious allies of the Bush administration voiced these and other scriptural analogies.